Hello and welcome to Funny Mummies, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian and writer, and I'm blessed with two lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, but also those that are aunties or friends, because let's be honest, we all need the help of our non-tired mates. Join us as we find the funny side of parenting, life, and being bloody great women.
Happy Mother's Day!
It's me again, Hattie Ashdown. We're so lucky. We've got co-host Gemma Beagley, and I believe she's got a little bit of eyeliner on today. Have you got a bit of eyeliner?
I have, and do you know what? I'm going to the football afterwards, so I don't know if I'm going to have to remove the makeup for that to stand in a field.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not a big wearer of makeup, so the idea of having a face of makeup on to go and stand in a field just seems like a complete waste, so I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, but you never know who's there, and you know, be aware.
No, I know who's going to be there. Have to see. They don't require makeup.
They don't deserve makeup.
They don't deserve me at my best.
But I thought it might also be because we started putting this on YouTube, and
I
didn't tell you, did I?
No, you didn't know.
Saw your face on YouTube and thanks. And your provocative dancing picture has become famous now over YouTube. Well, and that little laughter you heard in the background, I think it may actually be a year since we had her on, which is almost perfect timing. In case you can't remember, she was the 2019 Funny Women award winner after only 5 months in stand-up. I know. How about that? You may have seen her on many TV shows, including Live at the Apollo. She's also been writing away Suffer TV. She's got her own commission. She's also been writing on Jack Whitehall's Bad Education. And most importantly, she is the mum of three. She's Laura Smith.
Hello, hello, hello.
Nice to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think it was about, I should have worked this out, but I think it was about a year ago.
I think it was sort of end of January, early Feb. That's my feeling.
Definitely this sort of chilly time of year, but
yeah,
get a bit of sunshine.
It was lovely, yeah.
So how are you, love?
Well, I'm very well. I'm very well. We'll pretend like we're all sort of these amazing professional mums and everything. Like, we haven't, just before we press record, sort of gone, oh my God, and shared the battle wounds. But it was nice hearing that description of me, because, you know, Sunday morning when you're getting the kids ready and trying to pack them off to their clubs and drama clubs and all that, you don't really relate to whoever you just described it.
I'm not saying that to you every morning when you wake up, Laura.
It's like affirmations.
We're not saying... Excuse me, is that award-winning mummy Laura Smith coming
Sorry.
Through?
Can you just get your socks on? Did I mention my commissions? Thank you.
Can I read out a tweet that I spotted this week?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to know about who we've got on the podcast this week?
Ooh.
This week I delivered 2 writing projects, done my work in progress, hosted a corporate, got 2 kids sorted for World Book Day, 1 sorted on UCAS, baked 3 banana loaves for Turkey /Syria school cake sale, and tour support. Not saying I'm better than you. The facts are. I love life. Who is that?
Do you know what? I wrote that. I probably had a drink. And I wrote that. And then I got in and I quote tweeted that very same tweet, because I got in and I did get a look on this tube. It's what I call kebab shop syndrome. Now, kebab shop syndrome is when you've been feeling great in a club all night or a bar and you think you're so amazing. Then you get in a kebab shop and there's that harsh light and you go, fuck me, is that what I look like? Do you know what I mean? So I'd done my makeup in a like dingy green room, got home, done it after doing tour support, and then got in. I looked like I had tiger stripes on. There was no contouring. So I was like, look at me bragging on Twitter. But it was that kind of, do you ever have those weeks where you go, you're almost fizzing with stress because you think, I actually don't know how I'm going to get through this week. Like the deadlines are killing you.
Yeah.
You know, pinning yourself together for a big sort of gig or doing stuff. And then you get to yourself and you can actually like feel yourself dissolve. It's very rare that you can, often it's just the next thing. But Friday night I had a real sort of, I unashamedly celebrate myself. Well, because you know.
With that week, Laura, like last week, so So, I mean, that is like you're listing your wins there. So did you know that you had all that to do at the beginning of the week? And how do you approach it? How do you approach it? What do you do?
Well, you know, I always have this feeling, and I always had it in teaching. I always had it when I was studying. Like, it's sort of a meditative thing. You know, when the stress can overwhelm you, I think by hook or by crook, by Friday, this will all be done. You know, it'll either be done shoddily or I might have to ask for an extension. By Friday or what have you, whatever I've got to do, it will be done. And then I sort of think, I heard someone say once, you know, you are what you do every day. You know, there's not another version of you waiting in the wings. And sometimes you go through stuff and you go, well, you know, if I am a shouty, screamy mummy in the morning, and I'm not saying we don't always have those moments, but if I am, you know, that's just who you are. You can't pretend that you know, if you do it with good grace, you wake up with a bit of gratitude, you kind of go for it. That's just how you're doing things. And actually, I think by hook or by crook, by Friday, it's going to be done. And I'm in charge of how it gets done. And so I can, you know, and then, you know, I had a kid vomiting Tuesday night, had him all, you know, the one day Wednesday, which I'd set aside for these writing projects, I've got a sick kid at home. And, you know, we all know that feeling. Like, but, you know, we make it work. We put Jujitsu on and Bluey and we roll.
Do you think that mindset, the last time we saw you afterward, you obviously told us something quite shocking.
Yeah. And
do you think that mindset is what's helped you through the Big C treatment?
The Big C treatment gave me that mindset. Mindset because, and I I'd never be glib enough to describe it as a good thing because I'm, you know, you're never out of the woods with a Big C. You know, you hopefully get past the next 5 years and that sort of is a good marker of if you're past it. Do you know what I mean? I'm still very much in a danger zone, but a diagnosis like that, it hits you like a truck. Do you know what I mean? And as soon as we got that diagnosis, I watched my husband sort of disappear somewhere inside his head, which
really?
he doesn't consciously know he's doing. Mm. But you know when you can see it in your partner or friends, you go, I can see where. But I almost like, you know, shepherdess hooked him out of it. I went, wait. I always remember I said to him, and it sounds like, you know, when you go, cool, I wish, that's a really sassy line. I'm so glad I come up with it. It weren't one I thought of in the shower after. I said, listen, this is a head game. I said, if you lose your head, we've lost the game. And that's how I saw it. And I just thought, no. And, you know, when I think the reason I knew when I was here last year is because I think it was after my two surgeries, but before I started chemo. So I was in this sort of really bracing myself, big girl pants, and I didn't know what chemo looked like. But it was when, the reason I had 6 months chemo is because it was in my lymph nodes. And once it's in your lymph nodes, they have to check whether it's anywhere else. And it was the night before waiting for those results. And I've talked about it in other interviews, like podcasts, but like, you know, on Jonathan Ross and, you know, Wogan. No, right. But it was this sort of, well, I might hear the worst news. And the only thing I can control in hearing that I might have 6 months or a year, or, you know, the only thing is how I handle it. And like I say, there was no other version of me. If I, you know, I'm not saying there weren't flipping crying and tears and ugly snot. I'm not saying that, but by and large, I thought, well, I'm only in charge of how I feel about this. And it gave me this sort of presence. It gave me a sort of, I was doing my gratitude lists. And I'm not that guy, you know, I'm not like, I can't stick to anything, but I was doing gratitude lists. And it really, it's like I pulled myself out of such a dark, I almost can't relate to how dark the place was with diagnosis now, because I really pulled myself out of it. And I thought, you know, I really come to the conclusion, there's only ever today, you know, tomorrow you can't, yesterday you can't, there's only today. And it's given me a sense of sort of presence and gratitude. And I do wake up very thankful. I wake up very thankful, and I think of the tougher things I've been through. So I do find it a joy that I get to write and that I get to have this, like, wake up on a Sunday morning and talk to you girls, and you know, and it's like exciting to me. I'm so thankful for life. So yeah, and the thing is, you can't replicate that mindset. You know what I mean? I'm struggling to still hold on to it, and I can see myself in 5 years possibly forgetting all these lessons, and I really don't want to.
I don't think you will, because it's a bit like grief. They say, like, when you lose someone close, you never change. It changes you.
It changes you,
and obviously, you know, you've had a type of grief as well in the shock, and you know, so I don't.
Losing my breast, my body. I'm having my ovaries out next month. You know, there's this sort of, You'll greet, yeah, just because I've got the BRCA gene, so that affects, there's no screening for ovarian cancer, so they take them out. And there's a lot of things that have changed, you know, you lose all your hair, rocking the crop. But there is that, I suppose there is a sense of grief of who you were before that, yeah.
Yeah.
Work has come to you. I mean, it has come to you. And I assume that you're not out there pounding the streets, knocking on doors. It's like you've got an open mind and an open heart and this stuff has come to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible how busy you are.
It is. I mean, I found the lump the minute I September, I'm like, yay, I've quit teaching. I weren't going back after 10 years, you know, I'm not going back. And then I found the lump and it was just this kind of, whew. Mostly it was like I needed money because I'd quit my full-time job. But B, I really realised I was going for comedy with the same energy I went for everything else. Gritted teeth, want. We all do it. We're all on socials going, want that. And when I got the diagnosis, I couldn't name you one thing I wanted. I couldn't even think of one thing. I thought, what have I wasted my life wanting? I thought, I just want to live. And that, I think that crunky energy you can get sometimes where you want it too much, almost like when you know, if you're dating someone and they want it too much, like, oh, chop me out. I think you can go for life like that. And then a sense of such openness, like, come on, grabbing life with both hands, that has put me in a nice slipstream of
feeding off that, I reckon.
Yeah. You're attracting. There's you're an attracting. Energy, I think, that you're attracting.
Yeah, and long may it continue. I don't take anything for granted. I'm, you know, and I would say I'm good to work with because I'm not difficult to work with either. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know I add value, and you know, teaching gives you a work ethic. I know we've all got, you published that brilliant article recently, Hattie, about working and all that. And as though
I'm having a daytime job, yeah, it's on Chortle,
and it's brilliant, and when I was reading it, and you're, it's almost like you were coming out, but I just thought, no, like I, as I read it, I thought, God, reframe that. That is, you're superwoman. You're like superwoman and making things happen. And I just think women are so resourceful. I do, like, I think we're goddesses. I think we're so resourceful. We keep it all happening. And that work ethic that you do in your daytime job, when that translates to comedy, because people that have been in comedy since they were 18 and maybe have had all this success, I think they kind of go, I did this thing the other day, it was for Tom Ward. And I was sitting with Emmanuel Sanubi and we call time was one, and then they didn't. Then we're sitting in a coffee shop waiting. And I said, oh, do you know what? I hate waiting. And he looked at me and he really pulled me up. He went, come on, you and I both know we've earned money in worse ways. And it was like, I laughed and I just went, oh, yeah, it's so true. Because I think once you've had that big real life and hard work, when you're sitting in a coffee shop waiting for a producer to call, you know, the young producer, you're all right, I'll just have another cappuccino, like...
I'm warm and I've got a coffee.
Yeah.
And my feet up, yeah.
And you can park that ego, I think, a lot more. I mean, you still have these moments, you're like,
oh. I think that when I... It literally, that article was like, I could do part two, three, four. It was like it was opening the discussion because it was a shock to me that people were embarrassed. And it was just that I found, like, I talked to people that I was like, certain people, I was like, I don't think they do this. I was like, no offense, but I sort of, like, I didn't mean like they weren't good enough, but I was like, I don't see, I was like, I'm sure they got something else. And they're just like really sneaky about what they do. And I thought, why be sneaky? And then, yeah, like you say, but it was interesting speaking to some of the younger comics.
Yeah.
Who, like you say, it is like, oh, you haven't got that kind of like having to do a shitty job. I mean, bless him, Tadwa. I mean, like, he's 25 and he's in programming from like 20 or whatever.
I know, yeah.
High paid job. Of course he's not gonna give that up.
He's not gonna, yeah. Someone made a really funny point once. I think I was doing one on the Nation, I don't know, it's really early on. And this really brilliant comedian who I don't think signed, he just got it off his own back and everything. And he said, people go, I'll leave my daytime job when I'm earning as much in comedy. He goes, but that's not true. You've got to earn twice as much in comedy because you're working and doing comedy, which is supplementing it. So to quit, you've not just got to make the same money as that. You've got to make the same as both.
The economics don't work. They're just, yeah, it's just, it's impossible. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so going back to you being easy to work with, which I'm, what was it like? So
I'm full of myself with that.
People listening going,
I am really interested. So you're writing on Bad Education. Was that your first time in like a writer's room or how did it work? Because I've been asked before and I've got to be honest, it was on a show that I was, it was a long time ago, long yeah. time ago, and I wasn't ready for it. And yeah. it was also something that I felt I had no ground on. I was like, it was like a religious sitcom thing, right? I just finished, you know, filming Give Out Girls, and I'd not been in the writer's room. Me writing a sitcom with my friend is very different.
Yeah.
And I felt like to sit in the writer's room and be able to go, oh, this joke, I wasn't ready. But I sort of regret saying no, because I should have just, you know, pushed myself in. So I'm interested, was this the first sort of writer's room experience, writing on Bad Education?
I think it was. So it started off... So January last year, what BBC had commissioned was a one-off reunion show, but Tiger Aspect were like saying, no, 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 we want to then push it to a series. So the first bit of the writer's room was gathering some writers together, right up and coming, and people that does stuff. So, and just less real broad strokes over a week, possibly two, I can't remember, maybe, yeah, of like, what would this look like? What would Bad Education 2.0 look like? What, you know, what would the characters be? What flavour should we give it? Because I think there's a little bit of kind of, ooh, maybe a bit of tasteless, naughty jokes in the original.
Right.
So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun just talking about our school experiences. They made it fun. So that all, so we put the book together to kind of pitch to BBC. And once that did get commissioned, I think we were back in the room in March. And that was like, right, now let's really look at this. How do we shape these episodes? And you know what it was? It was a lot of, it's so much fun. It's like that minute, you know, when in a meeting when you all get together and you all have a laugh while you get your coffees and tea,
yeah.
and you're like, okay, right, meeting now. Whole day is like that little bit of where you're having a laugh while you're getting your coffees and tea. That's yeah. like a whole day. And Freddie is the co-writer and creator and director of the show. He's so gracious. You know, he allows space for people. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's obviously got a lot more experience, but he allows so much space for, you know, I'm going to say young writers, but because there are young writers in the room, I'm not young, but as in young in terms of their career. So that's really nice. And then I did another thing with Tiger Aspect, which was the Spencer Jones, you know, deep fake neighbor wars, which was a lot of fun as well. We had a lot more sort of free reign there because it was just. He's done this.
Thing, Spencer, I didn't know that was Spencer Jones.
He's a nutcase.
What's it called?
Deep fake neighbor wars. So it's based on, you know, Nightmare Neighbors Next Door.
Yeah.
But they've done it with using deepfake technology. So I wrote one of Kim Kardashian and Idris Elba arguing over shared garden in Catford. She's a bus driver. So just, you know, it's just Spencer. You just go, oh, yeah,
let's
just
match.
Oh, so he just let us match his lunacy, which was lots of fun. And, you know, and that was like, had brilliant writers on it. It was Jordan Gray and Travis J. And who else was in the room? So just lots and lots of fun.
Well, you're learning on the job, really. You've not...
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't do any, did you have any script writing experience? I mean, for those who don't know, you was a teacher, you was a second.
I was an English teacher, yeah. So I suppose I've got an English degree and I suppose I understand narrative and how those sorts of things work. But the steepest learning curve was writing my pilot, and that was like a real labour of love. And yeah, that was a real steep learning curve just to understand, you know,
structure.
How structure and thread plots and beats and just... first, second, third act, and understanding what, you know, the difference between maybe a sitcom and comedy drama and the, you know, the substances within that, and kind of realizing why certain things might not work even though you think they're funny. And it's like, you know.
Ugh.
And who are you submitting to? Is it a producer? Is it like who are you answerable to?
I suppose development can work two ways, can't it? Sometimes you develop something by yourself and try and get that to a production company. And then a production company, what happened with me is a production company approached me and said, you know, we love you, we'd like to develop something. And then you can either do that wholly with them, and then once you've got the script, pitch it to a channel or channels, or you can sort of pitch the treatment or the idea to a channel. So for the thing that I was developing, I developed the treatment with a production company, and, you know, to and fro, and with a producer and exec producer. And then I got the script commissioned from the BBC. So the BBC were paying for the script, which is quite obviously a good way of doing it because they're invested, they're in it. And so then that's sort of your to and fro in with the producer, and then it will go to channel, and then you've got a commissioning editor based at that channel that's sort of working with the project, who's then feeding back, and... you know, you're waiting for those notes. So, you know, it depends what you're doing. I mean, some people are just phenomenal and, you know, and can just, it's, I think it's very difficult if you could write a phenomenal script, but then the channels and producers haven't got any skin in the game. It's like, you know, you've got to be like, you know, it, obviously if you're a big name, you go like, oh, look, I've written a script. They're like, oh, I'm in it. But as a newbie, it's quite good to have that kind of where they're invested in it.
You're quite exposing.
Oh.
When you write a script, I never really understood that. My friend who's a theatre writer and director, and she used to go, oh, God, you know, when she was sending something. And now I really get it. And it's very exposing.
Very exposing and very, yeah, really, it's really been upsetting. And
I've got a friend who she's a writer, crime writer, and her first novel, she got the most incredible publishing deal, like loads of money for compared to what other people were getting. And the deals that she's been getting since just haven't matched. And she just feels like every time she's not getting that big deal is this huge rejection.
Yeah.
And you think, bloody hell, like, you know, like she's getting paid to do what she loves, like, you know,
which is
you know, what for her crime, you know, crime writing. But it and I know that she feels a bit silly going, God, I had this really great opportunity and I've lost sight of the gratitude for that.
Right.
Because it just doesn't, it's just not as good as that first one.
I think we can be quite sort of fatalistic and kind of categorical about things, can't we? You know, like life is sort of peaks and troughs. And I think, you know, I always used to watch actors on sort of, you know, Jennifer Ross go, oh, you know, what's your definition of success? Goes, you know, as long as they're working. And you think, oh, shut up. You know what I mean? But it's true. You know, you can have these massive actors where you think they're going to have these glittering careers, like huge, and then nothing. And then there's these steady actors, and then it all goes kind of huge for them. We're watching Jennifer Coolidge have a real moment where she was almost like a bit of a sort of, you know, Stifler's mum and kind of in Legally Blonde, and then very little kind of bit parts. And she's really having her moment. And that's so exciting to see a woman of her age, you know, really having her moment and having a renaissance, because I suppose it's resilience. It's like you were talking about your friend, like, oh, all of these things. Well, you know, early doors in stand-up, you'd nurse a bad gig for maybe a week. Now you don't, you know, I watched someone last night, they did both shows at City Comedy. He's like, you know, the first one he weren't really feeling. By the second show, he smashed it. And it's like, you can get over a gig like that.
Yeah.
So I suppose it is about that sort of resilience, you know. I love Oprah. She always says, what's your next right thing? What's your next right thing to do? So that's where I'm at. I'm like, you know, I'm earning a living very comfortably doing these things and writing and being in writers' rooms and having other deals and TV here and there. So I think, well, you know, that is the main thing. It can't, you know, if you're always chasing that sort of, you know, we can do it in any career, not just the sort of creative career, but or any scenario where we take anything as a value judgment on our whole selves.
Oh, God.
Which is, you know, this sort of like, this didn't do well, ergo, I'm a piece of shit.
Yes.
You know, and if you really go, I'm a piece of shit, I'm not a hot stuff as a writer, I'm, you know, and you know, and obviously the temptation is to always do that, and then but if you just go, okay, well, I'm just feeling the emotions of this, then get past that and go, okay, let's look at the facts and let's look at the positives and negatives, and you can try and be a little bit objective, then you don't take it on as this big value judgment, which we all do on socials. XYZ's doing that, ABC's doing that, and you're like, I'm not doing that, ergo, no one loves me. Everyone, I mean, what is it, Just for Laughs at O2? If I see one more post about it, I'm like, oh, we're not Just for Laughs at O2. I was invited to be on someone's podcast. I forgot to get back to them. You know what I mean? You can turn all of these things into a value judgment, like everyone's having a party that you're not invited to.
Yeah, I do still struggle with that, I must admit. I've had a bit of a time of it recently, actually, with like different things not happening and then just completely letting it spiral. It's so silly because we don't focus on the good things. And that's what I try to do. I try to, you know, don't focus on that shitty gig or something someone said. Focus on all the good ones that you have, because it doesn't get you anywhere. And I know all this, but when you're in that, oh my God, it's so exhausting as well. And it's so boring. I'm always like, oh, for God's sake, you're a woman of a certain age now. Yeah. You're doing what you're doing. Just get over it.
You're listening to the Funny Mummy podcast.
Yay!
Now can I go back?
Yeah.
I've got a whole thing about menopause at the minute, because it's like being gaslit by your own body. The thing about all these emotions, and especially when your mental health is not as robust as it could be, and you know, you can have all these thoughts. For me, it very much, you might manifest as kind of like a bit of self kind of doubt and jealousy and all these sorts of things. Like we can have that. I get very paranoid. Like if I have to cancel something, I'll be like triple texting, you know, and all this sort of guilt. And I think guilt, and now I've realized if I'm feeling all this guilt, paranoia, or however my, you know, mental health kind of manifests, I have to go, okay, the reason I'm vulnerable to all of this, the reason I'm being jealous or paranoid on it, is because I'm not sleeping. I'm on way too much caffeine. I've probably had a glass of wine every night for one reason or another. Do you know what I mean? I've eaten shit. And then, and I was sort of like, you sometimes you treat yourself like a baby, you know, like, has baby slept?
Yes.
You know, is baby hydrated? And then actually, I think it's good to acknowledge when you're feeling like that.
Yeah. I'm just going to like do the hunger tired thing. But I mean,
am I hungry? Have I shit myself?
Have I had a poo? That's a big thing with me.
Yeah, shitting myself's huge. I, you know, a clean up. But calling yourself baby is really nice. I've been talking about this because this comes, my 20-year-old said, told me this, and it's my eldest daughter. And it really works. Sometimes when I want to, I want to rip a bus driver's head off his fucking shoulders. I say but another voice kicks in and goes, "Has baby slept?" And it makes me almost like laugh out loud because I just go, because it's almost like this cute, like, "Oh, thank you." But it's like, you know, when you're like, or you know, when you're about to answer a fucking email and you're matching shirty for shirty and you go, I'll say to someone, "Has baby slept?" And it sort of dissolves me in the moment. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I'm writing that down, as baby slept. So, which brings us nicely to one of our new features, which is, I forgot, mummy enemy number one. So, for example, for the listener, is there been anybody that's, you know, just made your life harder as a mum or as a woman recently, you know, whether it be delivering not delivering your parcel, leaving you those annoying notes, and then you've got to trudge the buggy and the kids all the way there because you need that parcel. I can't think of anything. I did say about rages. I did swear at some a techie this week, which I feel so bad about, but it weren't really there. It was anyway, it weren't their fault, but that wasn't really to do with parenting. But it just caught me off guard because they hadn't set up the gig properly and it was not like me. But I think that came.
Oh, like Elton John, like that video of Elton John.
Yeah,
what?
You're Elton John, you're a diva.
Elton John, there's a footage of him going, "Did the fucking sound person fucking do the sound properly?" And it's like,
but you know what it is? I get those diva moments. Like, I'm not saying I'm ever going to become a diva, but you know what it is? I do think that's a mummy enemy because
I've had to drop my kids off. I'm on the way to the gig. I've got there. Yeah. I'm ready. I'm prepared.
Yeah.
Why aren't you?
Yeah. What's your fucking beef? Do you know what I mean? It's like, what, you know, what, you know, when you've, because you're stacking in so much and it's the things that make you flip. And that's when sometimes you flip on your own kids because it is those kind of, I have the things that I have. I've moved mountains to make this happen.
Yeah.
I can't let it be won or lost on you putting, you not wanting to wear these trainers today, which you've worn every other fucking day this week. And then you go, okay. Do you know what I mean? But it is those, these things that set you off because you go, it's not the thing, it's the kind of, how can this be an issue? When I've, the things that I've moved mountains to make happen.
Yeah.
Why is this tech not set up? Why?
Well, it was the whole venue, but that's another thing. So, anyone that felt like they've been
my big one, and is because, and I really think it's good, and it's been proven to be good. So, God bless the NHS. You've got to caveat that. But when you're trying to get a GP appointment, and before you can be seen in person, they'll do phone calls, and I think that's really good because actually, vast majority of things might be, oh yeah, that's a prescription, or actually do come in, and it's been proven to be a good money saver for GPs. It's all good, but those moments where you go, yep. Phone call, and obviously still being ill, I'll have lots of phone calls with consultants or cancer nurses and things like that, or the GP. And it's the private number that you know when you get to your phone and you've just missed it. You've just missed it. That's it.
It's like, the bus today.
You've missed the bus. And I'm trying, my daughter sort of just keeps moaning about little knee ache and ankle ache. And I do think it's just growing pains. But she's like, have you phoned the doctor? Yeah, I phoned the doctor. Yeah, he's going to phone me in the morning. And then you miss the call. Then you phone back immediately.
Your younger daughter.
And you phone the receptionist. They go, yep. And they'll call back. And then you've got the voicemail that says, just phone back anytime. And it's like, now I'm in an abyss. And it's like, I've got, so nothing come back on Thursday. nothing come back Friday. Then it's Monday morning. So now Monday's going to be chasing the GP for another phone call. But it's like, just phone me again. 9 times out of 10, if you phone me immediately after I'd have answered it, no! That is the missing, is the missing any medical person's phone call the first time round.
I've had that so much. I think we've all got to go back to having a landline because it just rings and rings. The mobile cuts off to the answer machine too quick, doesn't it? You just, well, mine does. How can you extend the ring? You can't.
But it's also like, we're stuck to our phones. Why do they always ring a second?
I was going to say, so when have you left your phone alone for one second that you missed the call?
For a second, I was doing a corporate on Thursday. They said, do you mind just announcing to the second tour group for this football stadium? I said, in that second, I literally went, and in the second group, would they like to go? Fantastic, come back to my phone. I was like, no, because my actual posting didn't start till like 10:45. So I knew I'd set it all up. I'll be there by 9. It's brilliant. I've got that window. It was that. Of course it happened then.
Yeah. We've got to start wrapping up. I didn't even get to Kid Logic, unless anyone's got a quick one. Anything, Kid Logic, anything that your kids have maybe given you like better advice than you could give, or done anything or said anything, you're like, yeah, actually, that's a really good way of looking at the world or whatever.
They come out of magic, didn't they? My little four-year-old, we were on our second ski trip of the year, because I see we are now, but he doesn't like skiing, so we did the toboggan run, but it's nearly 3K toboggan run. It's insane. And I mean, I pretty much was in like engaged core Pilates mode because I had my feet down so stiff to keep the ski. And he was just loving it. He's like, oh, and he just was so in his element. He went, Mum, you just got to face your fears. And I just think of his little voice saying, face your fears. It's something I've internalised quite nicely.
God, I don't know if this was logic, but my four-year-old got told off not once but twice for saying the F word at school.
Oh, God.
And but when I said to him, I said, why did you say it? He was like, he said, well, what else do you say when someone's annoying you and they're drawing on your drawing? Do I have to call them stupid? I was a bit like, fair enough, mate.
Oh, God. I've got one like that where I always get pulled for Alfred, the little one at school, because he's just so levy. But he got told he was on the carpet. They were having carpet time and he's chatting to his mate. And she said, and I said to Alfred, Alfred, you know you're not allowed to talk on the carpet. So he went, oh, okay. He got off the carpet to carry on his conversation.
Oh my God. That is perfect. So true, though. That's it.
He weren't being naughty, though. He was just went, he genuinely went, oh, my bad, got off. So he could carry on.
That is fantastic.
Right. Laura, is there anything, well, loads of things I'm sure you want to big up. Is there anything you want to big up? Or someone else? You can uplift a sister, if you like.
Uplift a sister? Oh, there's so much going on. I would like
your podcast.
To...
Your podcast.
Oh, we are. Me and Michelle just sort of having a podcast with BBC Sounds called Should I Bother? Where we sort of just curate our week, things that whether should you bother, like should I bother, you know, carrying on with this relationship? Should I bother... on this Netflix show, should I bother with this play? Should I bother upgrading my train ticket if it's, you know, for a little, you know, should I bother? So, which, you know, from the extremes. So it's just sort of like, you know, we're sort of trying to be the mates that you can trust around something, as in, yeah, you know what, ABBA Voyage is worth it. Find some money for it. Do you know what I mean? Or, no, the things that are worth maybe spending a bit of money on, or the things that are just like worth spending your time on, like a Netflix show or an ice bath or... Or, you know, something like that. So it's just us sort of curating our week. And, you know, we're women, we're the same age, but she's obviously Miss Thang with no kids and loving her best life. And I'm in the doldrums of motherhood.
So you're recording once a week?
We record it on Mondays and it'll go out on a Wednesday and it starts a week on Monday.
Wow.
So it's just a bit of fun of like, you know, just should I bother? And, you know, we'll sort of cover everything. You know, should I bother, you know, breaking up with a friend, you know, you just want to like, you know, when a friendship's all, should I bother, you know, those sorts of things. So it's a lot of fun, and maybe a little bit of why did I bother when we post our L's of the week as well.
Yeah, Are you going to have like listeners stuff, or are you going to keep it to just you two at the beginning?
Yeah, I think it's just us two at the beginning, but it would be nice to have people write in and stuff like that. We kind of want to cover everything because we don't want it to become something where I do want it to become this, where PR companies are sending us little face creams and shit. Thank you very much. Yeah. That'd be the one, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh God, I could give you loads. So I realised this week how indecisive I am, and I never really, I'm going to use it because I said it on stage. I was talking about something particular and I went, oh, I'm so indecisive. And they really laughed. And I was like, I'm going to use that. I was like, I never really realised.
The things that get laughs.
Yeah. And you're like, and you sort of go, am I? Oh, yeah. And I just realised that I've just done a big rant on stage about, I wasn't sure if I should wear this gazebo on. Gazebo?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Relay on stage, and then I was like, other stuff. Maybe don't wear the gazebo on stage, Hattie.
I'm on the verge of wearing gazebos like Gemma Collins buffet wear.
I keep the plastic in and all. Just
I mean, invite people in.
No, that's because we're getting a gazebo. I want a new. Oh, it's all going. It's all going on.
I love it. That's so lovely. Shall I wear the chalet or the gazebo?
Oh, well, thank you so much, Laura. Oh,
thank you. Thanks for having me. It's such a joy to chat to you guys.
Oh, good. I hope we, you know, I always say, apart from anything else, we get to finish a whole conversation without a kid pulling us away and, you know, like never finishing a whole conversation. So thank you very much. And to listeners, please keep subscribing and sharing. This is the only way people find out about us. Thanks very much, Gemma. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to my panel and guests today. Edited and produced by Scott Kingsnorth in association with Screaming of Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come too. These shows go out live on Soho Radio for the Other Woman show. See schedule for details. Please subscribe, rate and review and share this podcast. We really appreciate it, and it's the only way more people can find us. So see you next time for more Mum and Tonic.